WNOV 860 and W293CX 106.5, Milwaukee.
I'm Joy Baird.
And I'm Holly Baird, and we're the founders of the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, a website that teaches everyone how to grow more food.
Join us Saturdays beginning March 4th, 9 to 10 a.m., right here on 860 WNOV at The Voice for the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show, as we'll discuss the requirements, tips, and tricks on how you can grow more food on your property, regardless of the amount of space you have, as well as answering your garden questions.
And guests from right here in the Milwaukee area and all over North America, so you can become the best gardener ever. Coming up on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show, we're going to discuss the terms and the meanings of the mediums that you are going to start your seeds in and grow your plants in.
And we'll discuss the three types of peas and which one may be best for you in your garden.
We're also going to have Shauna Coronado. She's an author and a front yard gardener.
And your questions are always welcome. Have you told your friends that Garden Radio is back on the airways in Milwaukee? Well, go ahead and do that, because all of this starts right now.
You're tuned in to the only vegetable gardening radio show in Milwaukee with your host, Joey Baird, who grew up in the country but now lives closer to the city, and Holly Baird, who has always been a city girl. Combined, they have over 25 years of gardening experience who believe in simple gardening practices. A gardener for all gardeners. Founders of the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, where they created over 800 how-to garden videos to teach others how to grow more of what they eat. Join them for the next hour as they discuss vegetable gardening and more.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio program right here on WNOV 860 AM and FM 106.5. We are happy that you have joined us today to learn how to grow more of the food that you enjoy or want to enjoy eating. I am Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
Behind the WNOV microphones, we got Darren running the board, keeping us in line and on time. We have a number of great sponsors that make this program possible, and that's no mystery to any of you when you know anything about radio.
So Nasala Kombucha is the executive sponsor of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show. Nasala is made in Wisconsin with your local tea and natural herbs. Look for it in the refrigerator aisle at your local grocer. If you don't see it, ask for it, because if it's not Nasala Kombucha, it's not kombucha. Find more information at nasala.com.
You can also contact us in a number of ways here on the program. If you're on the Twitter machine, you can send us a tweet using hashtag TWVG and just say hi, how you doing, let us know where you're listening from, how you're listening to us, and we'll see it pop up on our side. You can also contact us on the ivyorganics.com 3-in-1 Plant Guard hotline.
And the Ivy Organic 3-in-1 Plant Guard naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents, protects newly installed plants and trees, shields prune and damaged surfaces for use on your roses, fruit and nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs. This product is non-toxic, environmentally safe, and organic. For more information, visit ivyorganics.com.
You can call that number at 414-444-5250 and get a hold of us there. We want to give a couple of thank yous to several people. Thank you to the CBS 58 team, Mike and the team over there. They did a beautiful story on us last Sunday morning on the CBS 58 Sunday morning. We were the Sunday morning spotlight. If you missed that, you can find that on our website, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, as well as the CBS58.com website. You'll click on the news tab. It'll drop down. You'll see Sunday morning, and we're one of the top ones. They're a very nice 7-minute story on us about our journey in gardening, as well as the journey in us having this radio show. Also, we want to thank the people at Brookfield.
At the Brookfield Public Library, we had a nice turnout on Thursday night. We had about 35, 40 people, and we talked about straw bale gardening, and it was really nice.
Just to make some notes here on your calendar, we have no public talks this week, no garden talks, but March 29th we'll be in New Berlin at 6 p.m. on how to grow the best tomatoes. Mead Public Library in Sheboygan, it's a doubleheader that day. That's a Saturday, 1 p.m. We'll be talking on straw bale gardening. And at 2:10, how to maximize your garden size regardless of the size and space you have available. So keep those in mind. And you can find out more of where we're going to be, where you might be, on our website underneath the Come See Us tab on the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com website.
Right. And if you want us to talk at your garden group, club, business, or library, go to our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and fill out the speaking request tab, or just send us an email at twvgradio.com.
That website will, that email will also get you right to us right now with any questions you have. And we want to give a couple of shout-outs. We did the show last week. I think we did relatively well for our first show ever being on radio. And we got some social media interaction from a couple of people. Two people sent us Instagram videos of them listening to the show. And this is not just a Milwaukee program on the podcast replay, and we do videos of us in the studio. It's for everybody who gardens. So we want to say hi to Charles, who's in the Los Angeles, California area. He's listening. He sent us an Instagram video. Norman in Osceola, Wisconsin, that's way up there. He sent us an Instagram video. And Sandy in Grand Marsh, she sent us a Facebook message saying that she was listening to us and that they listened through our website under the radio tab that links to the radio station's website. So,
and I also want to wish my mom a happy birthday. It was this past week. We'll be seeing her today, so shout out to my mom in southwestern Milwaukee.
There you go. So now that we want to talk about what you're planting in, we're talking about the soil mixes, the potting mixes, the compost, because there's so many terms that are being used, and Holly and I were looking at this earlier this week, and we kind of got some confusion on our part, and we figured if we're a little confused, this might be a good topic that we all kind of clean up and understand in general what these terms mean. So when we go to our independent garden center, like Blue Mel's over on Loomis Road, which is the official garden center of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, you can see the bag and know what the terms mean. So let's start with peat pellets first.
Right, and we had quite a discussion on what a peat pot versus a jiffy pot versus a peat pod was. And Joe and I had a little back and forth on that. So a peat
nobody
pellet,
got hurt.
Peat pellet is, it looks like a little, before it expands, it looks like a little tiny brown disc, almost like a cookie or something. And it's biodegradable peat pellet made of Canadian sphagnum peat moss. And it has uniform drainage, it has nice drainage, it has easy root penetration, and there are small amounts of lime in there.
And we have used them in the past, and they've got a netting on them. At the time of planting, you want to remove that netting. The industry or the companies that make it say, oh, the netting's biodegradable. I found netting wrapped around the same peat pots in the soil years later.
Right.
And there's really very little to no nutrients, even though they say there's some slow-release fertilizer in those. So you want to keep that in mind. It's a great use of – it's a great medium to start in. The individual, basically, containers.
It's very convenient.
Very convenient, but you got to keep the plant fed with some kind of nutrients. So let's go with potting soil, because potting soil and potting mix are two different things.
Right. So potting soil is, you buy in the garden center, and it's made of peat moss, pine bark, and either perlite or vermiculite, and that's for drainage and air space. And a lot of times, peat moss comes from the peat bogs of northern United States and Canada. And this is usually considered the higher quality type of peat moss.
Now let's take a different term. Let's look at potting soil. What is potting soil?
Is that the steering?
No, it's soil? Potting soil contains dirt,
oh,
quotation
right.
marks.
Potting. Potting soil is dirt and will often not give optimal results because of its thickness, and it doesn't allow water drainage or airflow.
So there's a term. There's two different things there. And then let's go with sterile mix, sterile soil mix. This is something that a lot of gardeners have heard the term of.
So sterile mix is what most, if you go buy your seeds at the garden center, that's generally what they are planted in. And it's sterile. It has been undergone a heat or chemical processing to kill any pathogens or seeds that are in it. And it's less likely to spread disease or weeds.
So those are some of the terms. Now, when we see the potting mixes, potting soils, that type of medium, we see these little white pellets. And those are not styrofoam. And some people have thought that. And I thought that to myself. Why are we having styrofoam in our potting soil? But those are vermiculite and perlite particles. And let's define what those are so we all understand.
Right. So vermiculite or perlite are volcanic byproducts that lighten the mix and improve aeration. So it encourages air for your roots. And then it also loosens the soil and it allows for proper drainage.
Now, the one that many people are very familiar with is the traditional backyard homemade compost. Now, compost is a...
It's it's the nature's recycling process of breaking down natural material.
Right, and it's very easy to do. The list of things you can't put in your compost is far shorter than the things you can put in your compost, but really anything from nature, the recommendations is not dairy, oil, or meats in your compost pile in the backyard, simply because that is an attractant to rodents. Now, if you're on a farm in the back 40, everything can go in that pile. You can let it sit, come back in a year, pick it up. Now, there is a term that is very getting more popular for the wrong reasons in the garden industry, and that is poison compost. Now, Holly and I, we speak at the Madison Garden Expo each year at Madison, Wisconsin, and each year they have a featured guest in the gardening world. And this year was Mr. Joe Lamp, a host of Growing a Greener World on PBS. So he was up there, and he's been a mentor to us in our videos on the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com website. We have over 830 of them. He's helped us very much in how the production of that is. He's helped us with kind of the guidelines on how to make a radio show, because he's done it too. And he had the problem with poison compost. So instead of us trying to explain it to you, we'll just let Joe Lample tell you what that poison compost is all about and how and what to look for.
I've seen this over the last year. They've dealt with poison compost, and you had this problem, and people don't know it exists. If you can just briefly tell the story to inform people of what to need to look for so they don't, like, ruin their garden as you did.
Well, first of all, it typically shows up in from horse manure. So if you are using hay in your garden that has been consumed by horses, and, of course, it breaks down in the compost pile, which is what happened to me. You know, we have horses. They eat the hay that comes from the farmer that sprays his fields with an herbicide. It's a persistent herbicide. The farmers like it because they only have to spray it one time. It kills all the broadleaf weeds, but it doesn't harm the grass, which becomes the hay. So they'll harvest clean hay. We feed it to our horses. It doesn't break down, so it's safe for the animals to consume, which is why farmers like to use it. But the problem is, because it doesn't break down, the herbicide is still effective as an herbicide, even in the composting situation.
Through the animal and all the way through.
Months and months later, when it's broken down, it's beautiful black gold compost, that herbicide is still there at full strength. But you can't tell that. So you think you're supplementing your garden with organic manure, right? And you mix it in, which is what I did, and it's ironic because I warned people not to do this, and I still did it myself because it looked so good, and I talked myself into using it, and I did, and it didn't take a week. Once those new seedlings, those roots spread out and came in contact with the compost that was tainted, the plants just started wilting, and I knew right away. It's an instant. Once you know what to look for, it was instant.
Almost kind of looked like the plant wasn't getting water that it was needing. It just kind of wilted to nothing.
Shriveled, wilted, stunted growth, disfigured. There was a lot of symptoms to it, but you instantly know. And then the problem with it is you only have two choices. You can wait it out, which can take literally 3 or 4 years, as it did even with me, proactively, or you can dig it out and replace it. I had 30 cubic yards of soil. That's at least 3 large dump trucks loads of soil. I didn't have the time or the money to change it out and buy it. So I waited it out, but I also proactively tried to do all that I could do as a human, which there's not much you can do. These are synthetic compounds that are designed not to break down. But if you expose them to UV light, air and water and heat, that means just turning your soil extra and exposing it.
Nature will kind of revert it back to natural.
It will accelerate the decomposition or the deactivation of the herbicides. So I knocked a year off of it. Just avoid using horse manure or ask your farmer. If you can get to the source of where it was harvested, ask them if they use that herbicide that's got, you know, it's got different trade names, but the active ingredient, there's a number of them, and the one down in Georgia is picloram that is the problem. But the other thing you can do is a bioassay test. So if you have a big pile of manure and you're curious as to know whether or not it's tainted, you can take some of that manure and mix it in with clean soil into a pot. And then on another pot, get what you know is clean soil, like if you went to a garden center and bought sterile soil. So you have two pots, one with sterile soil and one with half sterile soil and half of that compost. Mix it up. Put tomato seeds or bean seeds in the 50-50 pot and the same with the clean pot. And then just give it 4 weeks. See what happens. Observe. If they're both clean, they'll both look good and healthy. But if the tainted one is truly tainted, you'll know it because you'll see it in the seedlings. And if that's the case, you know, stay away from that manure and run. Don't walk and get away from it.
So know the source of where your compost comes from. Know the source where all of your products come from.
and make sure it's a trusted source. And if you're uncertain, do that comparison test that Joe talked about in the two containers. Coming up after the break, we're going to discuss peas. Seems pretty simple, but sugar snap, pod, snow, we'll explain all of it right after this.
Tweet Joe and Holly using hashtag TWVD.
Hot Chanel, 125 years of experience producing stone ground organic flour and cornmeal made from premium quality whole grains. Family owned company, continual standards that are non-GMO, organic at the highest safety levels, offering a wide variety of flours, pasta, baking mixes, flaxseed, and more, even kosher and gluten-free options. Found at most local grocers like Woodman's. For more information and recipes, visit hotchanmill.com. That's HODGSONMILL.com.
Hi, I'm John Lewandowski, retail manager of Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center. Now, I'm not going to tell you about our awesome dome-grown plants, our beautiful pottery, or our 40 varieties of landscape materials. What I am going to tell you is that Blue Mel's is a local, independent, family-owned garden center that truly cares about your garden or landscape project. So if you're looking for that one garden center that actually cares about you, come to Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center. We've been treating our customers like family since 1955.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants, to multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds. RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com.
Do you have a little space to grow? Check out Greenstock Vertical Gardens at GreenstockGarden.com. Greenstock is engineered to grow with its innovative space and water-saving design. You can grow vegetables, flowers, herbs, and even strawberries in just 2 square feet of space. Grow up instead of out. Perfect for the porch, patio, or deck. Grow up to 30 plants in a small space. GreenstockGarden.com has everything you need to grow in the littlest of spaces. Proudly made in the USA. For more information and to purchase, visit GreenstockGarden.com. Beans and Barley Marketing Cafe, a neighborhood specialty grocery store for the east side of the greater Milwaukee area, where you can find all you need, from fresh produce to bakery to organic frozen dinners, from wine to fresh fruits, carrot juice. The health food store has hundreds of products, vitamins, supplements, bath and body items, magazines, cards, books, and a knowledgeable staff. Catering available, open daily at 8 a.m. The restaurant serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week with a menu of good, healthy, homemade food, including vegetarian and non-vegetarian specialties. 1901 East North Avenue, Milwaukee, 414-278-7878. And online at beansandbarley.com.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Berry.
It's the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Program on 860 WNOV and 106.5 FM. WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening. 830 garden-related videos, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and a whole lot more can be found right there. We're going to talk about peas in just a moment, but first, we have a message from our good friends at TreeRipe.com.
If you like produce delivered right to your neighborhood, you should check out TreeRipe Citrus Company. You can find out where to pick up top-quality produce from tree-ripe.com. They have beautiful, tasty peaches and juicy, sweet blueberries. If you're sick of bland, mealy peaches and lackluster blueberries from your local grocer, TreeRipe has what you need. They come right to a stop in your neighborhood, fresh off the truck, right from the source. For location and schedules, visit tree-ripe.com. They have locations all over, including Iowa, Upper and Lower Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, and right here in Wisconsin. Tree-ripe.com is your go-to for the freshest produce around.
We always get peaches from them, and absolutely phenomenal. Never a blemish on them. And they're about baseball size or bigger.
They're really good peaches.
Really good peaches, yes. Well, from peaches to peas. Peas are one of the first crops that you will plant in your garden or in your containers. And there's a different terminology in peas. It's not just one pea fits all, okay? So there's three different types of peas, Holly. And what are the three categories in which the peas fall under?
Well, there's English peas. There's snap peas, and there's sugar or snow peas.
Okay, so let's break down, first of all, the time to plant peas is obviously not on a cold morning at 10 degrees like it is today. What you want to look for is soil temperature of a minimum 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's not just topsoil. That's, you know, about 2 or 3 inches down, because you want to get where that root zone is going to be. So you want to take a thermometer, a meat thermometer works really well. A digital meat thermometer works really well. Clean it off when you're done. Put it back in your wife's drawer, and she won't know that you've used it. But it works extremely well.
You always miss the step of cleaning it off.
Well, I miss the cleaning. But it, what the deal is, it gives you an instant reading. Instant reading. And you want to look at this, because it may, the soil may be 42 degrees at a time that you're looking at it. But that long-range forecast, you may get, you know, a couple weeks ago, we had 70 degrees here. And you plant the peas, and they're going to be dead today. So you want to keep that in mind. But moisture, soil moistness is important too. Just like any crop, you need to put the water to it, but adequately and you know, conservatively, to where the soil is moist but not soggy wet. And the key nutrients that these peas like is phosphorus. Now, that is the second number on your fertilizer bag. You'll see three numbers. It's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Peas produce their own nitrogen, so we don't have to worry about that. You want a low nitrogen number, and you want a higher center number to feed your peas. Now, if you have a soil test from the local university extension office, you can kind of determine what you got going on there and whether or not you need to add potassium or phosphorus or nitrogen or whatever.
So would it be wise for us to soak our peas before we plant them?
You can soak your peas in just plain water. About 24 hours, 12 to 24 hours before you plant. And that's going to accelerate the germination of those peas by about 2 to 3 days. People will say you can start them indoors, and there's plenty of videos on YouTube about starting your seeds indoors in peat pellets or peat pots. It's just so much easier to just plant them in the ground when the time is right instead of fighting them and all of this stuff. We want gardening to be simple for you, and less of a headache, and the fewer number of steps you have to make, the better off you are. So if you're transplanting your peas from indoors to outdoors, that's another step that you don't have to endure. Just plant them in the ground at the appropriate time. So let's talk about English peas first.
So English peas are the shelling peas. They have the thicker shells. They're usually a little bit larger, and you don't eat the pods. So if you were going to can or freeze peas, then you would use these, the shelling peas, for your regular peas.
Well, you're not supposed to eat the pods. You can chew on them. I guess they're
right.
Edible. I mean,
we do chew on them, and then you kind of just get
They're so stringy, but you get that juice
out. Like when people chew on sunflower seeds.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be a juice, if you juice with a, what do you call that, slow type of juicer, there's a juicer, and then there's a slow extract juicer.
Yeah, it's like an extractor.
Yeah, that would work very good for this. Then there's snap peas.
Okay, so these are mature peas with edible pods, and they make the snap noise. Now, you might see when you go shopping for peas or look online, you might see something that'll say like sugar snap or winter snap or sugar, super sugar snap. If it says snap in the name, then those are snap peas.
So and then we've got the sugar snow peas. Even if it has sugar in it, if it has that snow pea, it's a flat pod, and it's an immature pea that is good for stir frying. A lot of Asian dishes have this in it. You can let that pea get to a mature pod, but it loses some of its luster that way. But if you're going to save seeds, that's the way to go about doing it.
Right. And so you have to think about what kind of pea you want, what you're going to do with it, or just be like us and kind of plant along the gamut and just enjoy what you get, right?
But if you plant, you know, if you're going to plant just all three varieties, and all of them will grow the exact same way. It's not like onions where only certain type of varieties will grow in certain portions of the country. These will grow all no matter where you're at in the world. But you want to divide them up. If you're planting a row of English peas, a row of snap peas, a row of sugar snow peas, you want to mark them so you know what the end results, you know what you're looking for at the time of harvest. Because if you're waiting, if you intermingle it and you have snow peas intermingled with the English peas, you're going to wait until they all bulk up, and then you've got your flat pod peas that you're going to use for stir fry that are not going to be good for stir fry because they're at a mature state and they're big pod peas.
Right. And then you also want to trellis your peas. This is going to help them grow up, and you don't have to do anything fancy. You can just do some twine or garden string around some posts, and they will definitely twine up there, and the trellising is done.
You can be very creative. You can buy at the garden center a netting and allow them to crawl up that. You can use a fence. We've been very creative And if you're an innovator and decide to drive around the neighborhood on junk day, we found the bottom of baby cribs, that mesh wire bottom, and that works very well for peas as well. But again, like Holly stated, we want to get them off the ground because peas are soft stem plants. And if you don't get them elevated and they have, what do you call those, tentacles?
Tendrils.
Tendrils that want to grasp onto something. And if they don't have something to grasp onto, they will fall over. They'll get top heavy and fall over, and the stems will pinch, and then you don't have peas. You've got a dead plant on your hand.
Right. That's good to keep in mind. I was going to mention.
And there are dwarf variety peas as well.
Right.
Those are really good for container gardening because simply you just want to put them in a container. They'll get about 18, 24 inches tall at most. A normal traditional pea, we've seen them as high as 3.5, 4 foot tall. It's a very common plant size for them. But the dwarf varieties, and you can find these at garden centers online, they'll get, you know, 18, 24 inches high. You can drop a really cheap tomato cage or simply just put some twigs and stakes, broken limbs that you found in the yard, just something to allow them to shimmy up like a rope at the gym, you know. People, you just something to hold on to is all we're looking at doing with the peas. What else did you want to say about the peas?
I was just going to notate that it is important to make sure you're planting them at the right temperature and have nice moist soil, but not overly moist soil, because if that's the case, they could just rot in the ground.
Right.
And we've had that happen.
We've had that happen. You put them in the ground at that 40-degree temperature, and it's extremely wet, and then it kind of drops to below 40, and they set and rot. And this is common with any vegetable, any seed that you're putting around, whether it's potatoes, whether it's corn. There's an optimal soil temperature at root zone that these plants grow best at. That's why there's information on the back of the package. That's why there's a billion and a half different websites that say plant your peas at no colder than 40 degrees. Because it's more effective to, what's the saying? I'd much rather plant my peas, my tomatoes, whatever, fill in the blank, 2 weeks later than the second time with my neighbor when he plants them the first time. So you want to keep that in mind when it comes to growing peas in containers, in raised beds, in traditional ground garden. The thing with the peas in the containers, you can get away with that because you're going to have it on a patio, porch, deck, most likely, in a smaller container. And whenever it gets to, you're going to put good potting soil or compost, or we grow straight in compost. There's nothing wrong. There's a lot of sites that say, oh, you want to mix your compost with a certain mixture of potting soil or vermiculite. We've grown in straight compost for years and have had actually no problems, and it thrives very, very successfully. But with a container or grow bag, whatever the case is, you got your peas in, the dwarf variety, you can just carry them inside in the hallway if it's going to be really cold at night on the early days. And what is it? The peas, as the days get longer throughout the summer, the peas will produce less. We usually have the best pea production about the week before the 4th of July. Somewhere in that range is about the peak. Now, if you're the dwarf varieties work good in the containers, but you can also grow the regular peas in containers, grow bags, as long as you have some kind of stability.
Yeah, and could you grow peas in a straw bale?
You could grow peas in a straw bale. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, if you condition the bale correctly and follow the requirements on the back of the seed package and do all the steps correctly, peas will grow really anywhere. And the nice thing about peas, unlike some vegetables, you can plant these peas early in the spring when the soil is 40 degrees. Again, I stress that because people will want to put them in as soon as we get the first 40-degree day or first 70-degree day, and they think, oh, well, everything's good. Once the peas get harvested in the optimal time, about July, that's the time you want to replant your peas for the fall harvest. Peas take about 70 days to reach maturity. So by the time you harvest that first bunch, and you can start and replant them again to get a fall harvest. And that's a lot of the cool weather crops you plant in the spring.
And we'll talk about that when we get closer.
Yeah, we'll get more into that, but I want to make that reference.
We'll let you guys know when we plant our peas this spring so you can kind of get an idea for us here in Southeast Wisconsin.
Right. So before we take a break and before Shauna Coronado, our guest, front yard gardener and author, comes on, we want to, people are going to cut grass, Holly. It's a common thing. Most people cut grass, and if they don't, well, you're fortunate. But if you're going to use a lawnmower, you might as well use the best on the market.
Right. So do you hear that? That's your neighbor shaking in their grass-stained shoes because Aaron's is about to help you step up your grass-cutting game. Your name is on the mailbox, so Aaron's should be the name on your mower. heavy-duty steel construction, smarter, smoother controls, professional cutting performance. The only thing we love more than the smell of freshly cut grass is the sweet taste of victory. Aaron's, it comes down to this. Visit Aaron's.com to find your local dealer for lawn and snow removal equipment.
And right after the break, Shauna Coronado will be with us, and we're going to talk about front yard gardening and why she got into gardening and some of her 8 books that she has wrote right after this.
Never miss a thing. Sign up for the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener newsletter. Go to thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and click on the newsletter box.
You say? You say Nasala Kombucha. It'll put some glide in your stride and some pep in your step. Nasala Kombucha. Yeah.
Nasala Kombucha makes your body happy. Nasala Kombucha makes your body smile.
Really Granola is a small-batch Wisconsin-made granola available at reallygranola.com. This granola uses many organic ingredients and features Wisconsin products such as beautiful red Wisconsin cranberries, local honey, and other delicious Wisconsin products. You'll find plenty of fiber and protein in Really Granola, which makes it a great way to start or end your day. This granola is baked in a Wisconsin co-packing kitchen that helps to employ disabled workers. Find Really Granola near you or to buy online, visit reallygranola.com. Mycorrhizae is a beneficial fungus from plantsuccess.com that will greatly increase your plant's germination, ability, and a healthier root structure. You can increase seed sprouting, root growth, and general plant germination. Mycorrhizae can be used with hydroponics, root cutting, seed sprouting, coco core, and soil. Plantsuccess.com carries powder, granule, and tablet forms of mycorrhizae. Increase the level of mycorrhizae in your soil for your plants to give them the optimal opportunity to produce an incredible harvest. For more information and to purchase, visit plantsuccess.com.
Garden seeds do not have to cost a fortune. Just 99 cents at migardener.com. With over 300 varieties of non-GMO, heirloom and organic, flower, vegetable, and herb seeds available year-round, pay less and get more seeds. Shipping as low as $2.50. That just makes sense. Go to migardener.com for seeds and gardening needs, tools, and special blend fertilizer. migardener.com. It's that simple. Family owned and operated.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
The WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening, 830 videos, plus digital magazines, social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of that. You can hashtag us at TWVG on your Twitter machine. In just about 13 minutes, your questions are welcome on the IVOrganic.com hotline. Just moments away, Shauna Coronado will be with us. But first, Holly said she's got a question for me.
So, Joey, what are you looking for in a garden center?
Well, when I go to a garden center, I'm people who know what they're talking about. When you go to some of these big box stores, it's usually some kid that has very little knowledge, or it's somebody that was working in paint yesterday and now is going to work in the garden center just to make sure the plants are staying alive and moved around right. Why do you ask?
Well, Blue Mills Garden and Landscape Center is that place. They've been around since 1955, family-owned and operated. The owner of the business actually works in the building. That does say something. No matter the size of your garden need, Blue Mills at 4930 West Loomis Road in Greenfield can supply and surpass all of your garden needs. BlueMills.com at 414-282-4220. And they're the official garden center of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show.
Well, there you go. Check them out. So, our guest this week, she is Shauna Coronado. She is the wellness lifestyle advocate, professional author, blogger, photographer, and media host who campaigns for social good. She has Make a Difference focus on wellness, green lifestyle living, organic gardening, and healthy food recipes. Built to inspire, she also is a TEDx speaker, as well as an author of 8 books. Her latest book, 101 Organic Gardening Hacks, Eco-Friendly Solutions to Improve Any Garden. Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Program, Shauna Coronado.
Hey, thanks so much. It's nice to talk to you guys once again.
Well, it's a pleasure. You've taken time out of obviously your very busy day to join us and our listeners to share some of your gardening wisdom with all of us.
Absolutely. Happy to help.
Well, Shauna, for people who go over to your website, shaunacoronata.com, and see all of this activity that you have been doing over the last several years, I want people to kind of know the backstory. You didn't grow up in gardening. There was a certain point in your life where you decided that you needed to make a change. And if you'd share that story with us, because I know there's some listeners out there who are facing or have faced that same situation that you went through.
Okay, well, there's a couple different backstories here. The first one is that I was raised on a farm in Indiana, so I was familiar with farming and big ag and gardening in general. But I moved to Chicago, and for years, I didn't see a garden. You know, I didn't go to a garden. I didn't have that experience whatsoever. And so I was working in a very high-paced job, and it was incredibly stressful. The boss took me into her office one day and said, hey, I want you to work more hours. And I kersploded with anxiety and said, no, I'm never doing this again. I walked off the job and I started gardening as a full-time career with no horticultural degree or background. I just was passionate about touching the soil and felt that it was very helpful. And at the beginning of that season, I was taking over a dozen prescriptions a day. By the end of that season, I'd gone down to 2 prescriptions a day and totally changed my life. And that was the beginning of all that I'm doing now. I wrote a book about the experience, and then I started writing a blog, which, of course, became popular eventually. You know, it started out very slow. I didn't think that there was a future there. And I just kept telling the story of wellness and gardening combined, and then jump ahead many years, and here we are. The second backstory is that in 2015, I was diagnosed with severe degenerative osteoarthritis. That also was very devastating to me because, you know, having that type of pain, it was so much pain that I could barely walk. It's in my spine. There is no cure for this. And so I was quite devastated thinking that I might live with this for the rest of my life. So over the last couple years, I've been working to find a solution for people that have chronic pain by using a garden, by growing, and also by consuming food that would be anti-inflammatory. And what's happened since I started, remember, I was down to 2 prescriptions a day. One of them was high blood pressure. Now, several years later, I walk 1 hour a day. I eat an anti-inflammatory diet that has lots and lots of herbs and vegetables in it, no grains, and no dairy. My pain is down by 85%. I am off all my prescriptions. I mean, I took high blood pressure meds for 20 years, and living this lifestyle has changed it. So the diagnosis was quite devastating, and I still have an occasional bad day, but overall, I feel better than I ever have in my whole life. And you can't beat that after a diagnosis of, you know, basically chronic pain for the rest of your life.
That is fantastic. So you are a front yard gardener. Why do you garden in your front yard?
You know, initially it was because it was the only spot in my garden that was full sun. And my grandmother always told me that you have to grow vegetables in full sun. And so I built a garden that's really a till-free garden. I work to layer up that soil, and I don't turn it over on an annual basis at all. And the garden itself became quite beautiful, all low-growing vegetables. We're talking like cabbage, Swiss chard, you know, things that are very colorful, and I would design an interesting design every year, and that soil was really the key to the front lawn veggie experience. So the reason that I garden in the front yard started out because it was in the only sun I had, but in the end, what happened was it was the place where I could really connect with people the most. People would come and visit me there and see that front lawn and say, hey, maybe I could grow it too. And by the way, we donated every year about 500 pounds of fresh vegetable to the local food pantry from the garden. So it became really important for my community.
So let me follow up with that question there. If somebody wants to grow edibles in their front yard, there's some criteria that most municipalities require you to follow, and some completely ban it at all, what is some what would be some of the considerations that you would tell a listener that, hey, I want to grow in the front yard for a variety of reasons, whether the backyard's already full and I want to expand. What are some of the considerations a listener might want to follow before just going ahead and digging up the front yard or putting raised beds in?
Right. Number one, and this is really important, you must go to your city and you must see what the rules are. That's the first. Because some cities have very strict rules against it, and other cities don't say. You know, they're open. Most all cities, if you're in a suburban or an urban area, will require that you don't just throw up a traditional garden, that you throw up a garden that looks beautiful. Because then the neighbors are not going to complain, right? Then it's going to be beautiful for the city. So the focus, I think, should be, whether you're growing vegetables or not, an attractive garden that is not weedy. And also that it is, you know, and maintained well. But second to that, once you get past the city itself, a beautiful garden, the next thing would be contact your homeowners association, because many homeowners associations also have very strict rules. So if you belong to one, you might have some issues. But there are ways to get around some of the rules. For example, if you plant very beautiful ornamental edible vegetables, let's say a bright light Swiss chard and kale, that's maybe dinosaur kale, and those type of plants, they don't even look like vegetables. So many people are planting them up close to their foundation or closer to their foundation in groupings and waves. So they actually look quite beautiful and more like a very traditional design, if you will, like a landscaping design. And that's a way that you can sneak in the vegetables and have them look very attractive and also have them be useful.
Great information there.
Okay, so for some of our listeners who are interested in gardening but not sure where to start, what is your biggest challenge whenever you decided to start gardening?
Well, you know, truthfully, and you ask any experienced gardener this, most of us have killed more plants than we've ever grown.
You can't be a gardener unless you've done that, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, okay. I am a plant murderer. I truly am. And once you understand, this is very critical to understand, because I think particularly in the United States, people think that gardening, if you have a failure, that you are a failure. And that's not true. Every failure is a learning experience. Next time you do it better and you do it differently. And so that's how I've applied my experience in my own garden. You know, every failure is, okay, well, that didn't work, so I'm going to try something different. Now, what that's caused me to do is also be more experimental. So one of the things that I experiment with, for example, is I started growing vegetables in shade to try and find out what vegetables work successfully in shade and what vegetables did not. And what I found out is that the general rule is no roots and no fruits. A tomato, for example, is a fruit, and if you grow it in shade, it does not produce very well. Same for a potato. A potato is a root. It does not produce very well in shade. But outside of that, all those leafy greens and herbs grow really well. I never learned that from a book. I learned that from practical experience of failing into success. And so I highly recommend that people welcome the fail and try to experiment as much as possible.
Now, Shauna, we talked to gardeners from all over the country. What has been your nemesis? What has been the plant that you, whether edible or ornamental, that you have just struggled to try to grow? Ours is cabbage, or ours is cauliflower and broccoli. Just can't grow it. Do you have one of those plants or plants that are just on your list that you're like, I'm done trying?
You know, for a different reason than you're asking for, but I will no longer grow cilantro. Okay, I love cilantro in cooking. And I'm one of those people that I have the cilantro gene, you know, so I love cilantro. I could eat cilantro raw in a salad, like a whole salad. So I love it so much. But the problem with cilantro is that it flowers too quickly in my experience. So I plant it and then it immediately goes to seed. You know, so if you plant the plant, if I plant it from seed, it sometimes doesn't come up because the seeds are so tiny. You know, so sometimes it doesn't make it up to sprout. And other times when it does sprout, it's tiny, and then suddenly it's huge and it goes to seed again. And so A couple of years ago, I became like this ranting, crazy, cursing woman, and I ran out and I ripped up all the cilantro, and I had vowed I'm never planting it again. I don't like it.
We understand. We understand your frustration. So you've published your latest book recently, which is The 101 Organic Gardening Hacks, Eco-Friendly Solutions to Improve Any Garden. Where did the inspiration for this book come from? And then without giving away too much, do you have a favorite gardening hack from your book?
Oh, absolutely. So 101 Organic Gardening Hacks came about because that's what I was doing in my garden. My publisher approached me and said, hey, do you do any hacks? I'm like, oh, my gosh, my entire garden is a hack, if you will. And, you know, if you know what a hack is, you see them on Pinterest all the time. That's where I first saw the word hack. And it's really clever ways to upcycle and to do things that are good for the environment and help you garden. And it's just quick tips and tricks. So, yes, I do have a few favorites. One of my very favorite is I line all of my gardens. Well, I line all my walkways with wine bottles. I turn them upside down, dig a little trench, and plop them in along my walkways. And what they do is they hold in the lime screenings, which are a part of my flagstone path. So they're a very useful part of what I do. And like you guys, I have weather that's extreme. I go from, you know, minus 30 in the winter all the way up to 100 degrees in the summer. These wine bottles have been in my garden for 5 years, more. Never had a break. Never had an issue with them. So they're very tough, and they hold up well to the environment. So that's one tip. The other one is similar to this, which is lining your beds with something creative. You go out and you spend a fortune on these bricks from the big, you know, big stores, the big box stores. And granted, they look very professional, but they're so expensive. I mean, if you have a big garden or expanding garden, it's very tough to line your beds with all this very expensive material. So I started repurposing things I have at home. And even on the cover of the book, it's done in this cute illustration, but I show you photos on the inside of the book. You can see these antique glass insulators that lots of people collect as antiques, but I use them to line the edge of my garden beds. And I do that with other things, too. You can use natural materials like bamboo, or you could line your garden beds with interesting items that, like old car parts and anything that you have that's creative. But the secret here is that you don't want to get things that are way too cluttery, because then your neighbors are going to speak up about that, right? It has to be something that's uniform and attractive. And the wine bottles, the glass, it works really well together.
Well, before we let you go, Shauna, where can people find your new book, 101 Organic Garden Hacks, Environmentally Friendly Solutions to Improve Any Garden?
You can find my book almost anywhere, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon. And if you go to my website, shaunacoronado.com, there's a spot on the right. You can click right through and order directly. And the good news about the book is it's already in its second printing, and it's been very popular. I am so very excited to see that it's doing well. I think everyone is looking for a quick tip and an easy idea in the garden, and this book does it.
And also on your website, you can find your other 7 books as well, as people can get those from there also.
Absolutely.
Well, Shauna, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us and our listeners and share a little bit of your garden knowledge with all of us so we can all be better at growing our own food.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Can't wait to come back.
Well, have a good weekend, Shauna. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks, Holly.
And we'll
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll be right back after this.
A gardening question? You can call into the ivorganic.com hotline at 414-444-5250 right now.
Mantis Plant Protection Professional Grade Organic Pest Control Solutions. They offer Mantis EC concentrated or ready-to-use spray, certified organic and environmentally friendly insect killer, gentle on pollinators and other organisms, but effective in killing soft-bodied insects and spider mites fast, safe around your children and pets. They also have the cleanest and whitest diatomaceous earth on the market. Visit MantisPP.com to receive a free organic pesticide cheat sheet, which is a list of organic insecticides that are used effectively and kills insects fast. Visit MantisPP.com to download it today.
Do you have a problem with deer or small herbivores eating your vegetation? There is a natural solution that is safe for your pets and family. Bobex is the answer, an environmentally friendly solution to protect your plants, will not wash off, and is guaranteed. Bobex Deer was independently tested against 9 known competitors and rated 93% effective, second only to a physical barrier. Bobex can be used on all types of ornamentals, trees, and shrubs. Ask for it by name at your local independent garden center. Find out more, visit bobex.com. BOBBEX.COM.
Do you want your next raised beds to be easy, functional, and beautiful? The Embrace helps you create the garden you've always wanted. Finally, raised beds that everyone can assemble and enjoy. No tools needed. Just slide any lumber into the Embrace corner, fill with your favorite soil mix, and you're ready to plant. Made from 100% recycled steel right here in the USA. And a portion of every sale helps to build school and community gardens all across the country. Let the Embrace help you create your next raised bed. Grow beautifully with the Embrace, available at local garden centers and online at artofthegarden.net.
I want a garden center that listens to and understands my needs.
I want to buy my gardening products from a local business with strong ties to the community.
All I want is a garden center that truly values their customers.
It seems like everyone is selling plants these days, but I'm having a hard time finding quality.
I take pride in my garden, so I want my garden center to take pride in their products.
Where will you be going for all of your gardening needs this season? Blue Mel's Garden Center. We are your answer.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
Now back to two environmentally conscious organic gardeners.
If you spray chemicals on your garden to get rid of those bad bugs, those chemicals are not, they don't just kill the bad bugs. They kill all the bugs in your garden. And without having a balanced ecosystem, your plants and your particular growing zone can suffer.
Joey and Holly Bear.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio program. WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and a whole lot more there. You can call in on the IVOrganic.com hotline to the top of the hour. What is IV Organic, Holly?
So Ivy Organic is a 3-in-1 plant guard, naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents, protects newly installed plants and trees, shields pruned and damaged surfaces for use on your roses, fruit and nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs. This product is non-toxic, environmentally safe, and organic. For more information, visit ivorganics.com. And we actually have a caller.
Yeah, if you want to call in, 414-444-5250. Caller, what you got a question for us?
Yes, good morning. First of all, I think your show is extremely informative. I saw you on the news last Sunday when you were doing an interview and talking about a garden. But my question is, when I was a little girl, I used to cut the tops off of carrots and root them. They would root nicely, start growing. Now, I'm not sure if it's because of the GMO seeds. Once it starts growing a little bit, it just dissolves in the water.
Okay, what she's referring to is some people will take the greens off the carrots and cut about a half inch of the actual carrot itself and then put it in some water, and it will begin to root, and then it will grow another carrot. Okay. Usually it's probably the hibernation of the seeds that they have created for the big farmers in California and wherever these carrots come from. That's what my expertise would tell me is they especially breed these carrots to create a carrot at a certain amount of time, at a certain style, a certain length, and then they package it and process it and ship it to your grocery store, and it sits on the shelf for 2 weeks or 2 months for longevity. And because it's not that heirloom traditional organic carrot that you were used to having as a child, that it's lost some of that characteristics in resprouting the roots.
So what you could do is you could buy some organic carrot seeds, an heirloom variety. You could grow those carrots, and then you could continue the process of regrowing from the tops.
I'll try that. And one more quick question.
Absolutely.
My mom is a green thumb. She can grow anything. She now lives in Alabama, and I told her about your show last week when you were talking about growing your vegetables in Was it a bale of hay or was it straw?
Straw.
That was my next question. Straw.
Yes, it's straw. Straw is a lot better. It doesn't contain the weed seeds that hay does grow in. And there is a conditioning process for the straw. You can't just put the seeds right into the straw and expect them to grow. You do have about a 10 to 12 day conditioning process for that.
And the straw will actually retain more moisture than the hay does.
I did tell her that, but I'll call her back today and let her know. I thank you for your show.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
So additionally, we have some other questions that we have come in over the week. You can also email us at any time at twvgradio@gmail.com. Throughout the week, if you're in the garden and something's going wrong or if you're trying to start your plants, we're always welcome to take those emails. We don't have to be on the air in order to get them. We will email you back. So one of the questions, Holly, we got this week was... you want to read it or you want me?
I'll read it.
Okay.
Okay, you can answer it.
Okay.
So I've heard that ashes from the fireplace are good for gardeners to use. Is this true and why?
Well, the traditional, when you hear the word potash, this is a term that was used years ago because it would be the ashes they would put in the pot from the fireplace. So now it's they've changed the terminology. But if you've got a wood-burning stove and you're using actual wood, you're not using this pressure-treated products or anything like that. It's traditional, regular tree wood. You can use that wood ash as part of a fertilizer in your garden. Now, the volume of wood ash, it's a phosphorus. It's that middle number on the bag. That they've changed, you know, phosphorus, potash. They've kind of changed the terminology around. But it ranges... to 2.8 to about 8.6% calcium and all of this stuff. But basically, you can use it in your garden. And from what I've seen and what I've read, a report of the Ohio State University reports that wood ash are 40 to 50% effective as calcium carbonate. So how much do you add in your garden? Well, it depends on how big your garden is. You would want to estimate about 60 pounds of wood ash will accumulate in a quart of wood. So do that little math there. Holly, how much would you recommend putting in your garden? I would recommend a couple of pounds per 10 square feet. You don't want to overdo this. And because of that, if you put too much phosphorus in your soil, it's going to affect affect the root and plant development. So you can do your research on it, but you can add it to your garden sparingly, but we want to do it that way. We do have a caller on the line. Do you have a question or comment?
Hey, Joey, it's Joe Lample.
Hey, how you doing, Joe? Joe Lample, host of Growing Greener World.
Yeah. Are you still on the air?
We are on the air, Joe. You are live.
Oh, man, that's cool. Well, listen, man, I just wanted to congratulate you and Holly. You guys have been working so hard to get to this point, and if anybody deserves it, it's you two. And I'm just proud of you, and I'm impressed, and I love your knowledge and that you share it freely like you do across all the platforms, and now you have the opportunity to be live and serve your community as well, and I think that's fantastic. So I just, and I heard you earlier, you played some of our comment from the killer compost conversation we had, and I was happy to be a part of that. But most of all, I just wanted to call and wish you guys the best of luck and to congratulate you on the hard work in getting where you've gotten today.
Well, that means a lot to us, Joe. For those of you who don't know, he's the host of Growing a Greener World on PBS. You can find that on the Create channel as well. Also, growingagreenerworld.com has all 7 seasons of Growing a Greener World, and if you want to watch a gardening program, that would be the one I would suggest to watch.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for calling in, Joe.
You're welcome. All the best to you.
Thank you. We will take one more question that we had come in this week, and it's about seeds.
Well, okay.
Oh, well, which one did you want to cover?
We can talk about seeds.
Let's talk about seeds.
Okay, so the question is, I receive a number of seed catalogs so far this year. Is there a difference in one quality of seeds from another other than price and shipping and handling?
Well, it all depends on where the product, where the seed was manufactured at. The official seed supplier of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener and Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio program is MI Gardener. It's a husband and wife and little girl, a little daughter, a seed company out of Michigan. He specifically has a broker, and he has a stringent requirement for the seeds. They're 99 cents. So, for example, you get 99 cents worth of seeds. You get 1,000 carrot seeds. You get 25 tomato seeds, that type of thing. But he does seed sprouting tests. And if they don't meet the criteria, he has told me that he will send it back to the supplier and say, hey, either fix your seeds or we're going to buy seeds from somewhere else. So there is a difference because anybody can sell seeds. It's the quality of seeds in which you get. And just because you buy seeds for $4.99 at a big box store doesn't mean that's the best seeds in the world. So keep that in mind. And all the links that you – all the sponsors you can find under our webs on our website under the radio tab on the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com.
So Nessala Kombucha is the executive sponsor of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Nessala is made in Wisconsin with local tea and natural herbs. Look for it in the refrigerator aisle at your local grocer. If you don't see it, ask for it, because if it's not Nessala Kombucha, it's not kombucha. And find more at Nessala.com.
Next week, real quick note, Venus Williams, she's the executive director of Allison's Gardens here in Milwaukee. She will be with us. We're going to debunk some very common garden myths and how to start that garden with that patch of ground in the backyard. Miss any part of this show or previous shows, visit the radio tab on our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. For
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and until next week, we will see you in the garden.
WNOV 860 and W293CX 106.5, Milwaukee.